When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Bears never had the answer. So if you could look at big picture, Matt Eberflus kept his job because you could justify it because he was a top flight off defensive coordinator. He's not been this year because of injuries or whatever you want to say, but he's not been this year. Maybe he's doing too much, but the operation is broken.
I don't know, man. It's not working. It's depressing. It's kind of rough to watch.
After watching the tape from yesterday, I'm very pleased with the effort and the way the team finished. Didn't get it done at the end, but put ourselves in a position to win the game. Now we just got to finish better.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
You guys are the Titans of morning radio.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is Thanksgiving week. That's one of our favorite meals of the whole year. We look forward to it, and I wish everyone a good one. And, try not to get involved unless you have to do all the cooking, but make sure you are prepared.
Morning, Mully. Yes.
Is the other thing.
Tuesday, we're 2 days away from only day of the year where we'll enjoy stuffing. I don't know any other day where I have stuffing, but I look forward to it.
I saw a recipe for leftover stuffing from Traeger. Every once in a while, they send me a thing, and I'm reading this thing, and I'm like, all I want now is leftover stuffing.
Well, I think it's good. I mean, you eat it when you have it, but you don't really eat it. Think of it outside of this week, do you?
Do you ever have
stuffing any other week of the year?
Stuffing instead of potatoes?
No,
you don't. I feel like we're in an ad. I guess you're right.
We're in enough ads.
You go. I guess this is the only meal I have had all year with stuffing.
Enjoy your stuffing.
That's a good point.
Enjoy stuffing.
How do you make it?
I don't.
Do you have celery and people, a little chicken or what?
I'm not really that
chicken stock.
To think of the different varieties of stuffing that you have, depending on whose house you're at, it doesn't really matter to me. I like it all, it seems. Huh. And I like it all, I think. I've been thinking about this because I only have it once a year.
Huh. I wonder if you could have it more often if you wanted. I mean, they have stovetop stuffing.
You're not going to be out at dinner or somebody's house in June and say, oh, you know what? I'll have the stuffing on the side. No. You're going to have what you have.
It's pretty true.
You're going to a restaurant. You're going to a friend's house. You're not going to have a barbecue and there's a bowl of stuffing to choose from. You have stuffing once a year. And now this is the time of year to enjoy your stuffing, people.
I mean, this recipe was like you take a lump of stuffing, you chop up some turkey, you put it in it, you clean up a hot pepper.
Okay.
And then you chop that up and you put it in. Then you wrap the whole thing in bacon.
All right.
And then you Traeger it for 40 minutes or something. I'm reading this thing and I'm like,
that sounds pretty good.
That's all I want to do.
Well,
which is absurd because I got to have my Thanksgiving.
This is another Thanksgiving hot take. There are no bad stuffing recipes.
That's probably a great point.
There really are no bad Thanksgiving stuffing recipes. Because everyone has their favorite.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own kind of twist to it. You may like the bacon. You may like the peppers. Whatever it is, put it in. Stuffing
That's good advice.
It's inexact, and it is undeniably good.
Do you eat a lot of turkey outside of?
Outside of Thanksgiving?
I'll have a turkey sandwich and I'll have turkey, but I don't make a turkey.
Does ground turkey count?
Yeah, ground turkey you have.
Mully, there's nothing better than a turkey burger.
Well, I had spaghetti and turkey meatballs.
Thank you.
Literally, 3 days ago.
So when I used to travel a lot, and I know you used to travel a lot.
Yeah.
But my go-to litmus test of a, you know, type of restaurant and sports writers would go to. We don't go to fancy restaurants.
No, we go to.
You go to kind of middle of the road, kind of nice sports bar type places.
Yes.
The favorite sports bar order, the go-to order would be the turkey burger and
really?
Fries. Yes.
Wow. You are way too healthy.
And I would sample the turkey burgers across the country. So wherever I would go, I would order the turkey burger. So yes, I eat a lot of turkey.
The generally speaking, the turkey burger is thought to be drier than a regular burger.
It is. That's why I fell in love with ranch.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm obsessed with ranch dressing.
Well.
And I love ranch dressing on a turkey burger.
I mean, I don't want to get into all sorts of, I don't want to be talking like we're an advertisement, but, you know, Daisy Sour Cream has a ranch dip.
Is there anything that you think of where you're not bought and paid for? Mr. Look at you.
Out look at me.
Okay.
You're standing there with a flag and anthem shirt.
A new one.
This is my, I love this shirt. This is, what do you call it? One of those shackets?
It's a shacket.
Yeah.
They're very comfortable. Like. They're very toasty.
And even my t-shirt is flag and anthem.
Well, of course it is.
As are my jeans.
Of course.
I'm very flag and
anthem. Well, we're dressed up head to toe. But we digress, but enjoy this week because whenever.
It's a great week.
Whenever, whatever you eat, wherever you gather, it's a lot of fun. And there's a lot of things that are beginning to happen. You know, it's Tuesday.
There aren't many meals that you plan out like Thanksgiving. You know what I'm saying? Like, there aren't many, like, family meals where, like, you know.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, and your birthday dinner.
There are things you love. Yeah, I suppose that's it.
That's about it.
Enjoy it.
Thanksgiving, you have your dinner. Christmas, you have your meal gathered, and then I have my Kentucky Fried Chicken on my birthday. Other than that, I can't really think of meals where you plan.
Around Christmas, we go out to dinner with my brother and my sister-in-law and my wife, who it's just a wonderful night out. And we go to the same place, and we have the same meal, and I love it. It's really fun.
It's cool. Now, I wonder how many people this year, because of the realities of the football season, and I don't mean to be unkind, but, the Bears, do you make time to watch the Bears?
Yeah.
Is that going to ruin anyone's day?
No, Bear fans will watch the Bears play. I think they'll get, especially as the early game, I think they'll get a ton of people that will watch the game and then go have their turkey bowl.
How will it affect the mood?
Well, it won't be happy.
I know. That's my point. Thanksgiving is very festive. It's very reflective. It's very positive type of experience in most cases. It can be awkward if you have the occasional, relative you haven't seen in a while. And, we're sitting there. Okay. But typically, it's a very good get-together.
It's a great get-together.
Will the Bears' outcome affect many moods? Because it's not going to be good.
I don't think so.
Okay. It shouldn't.
I think.
Ideally.
I end up talking sports probably more than I'd want to on Thanksgiving because you see people you don't see all the time and they want to run their theories by you. You know how that works, right?
Yes, I do know how that works.
And I'm very happy to do that.
I think we know.
I've got a feeling that a lot of the conversation is going to be about the coaching staff moving forward and the replacement coaches and who's going to be, available and who's going to want to come here.
Hey, Molly, why wouldn't Bill Belichick want to coach in Chicago?
Yeah, exactly.
When are they going to hire Belichick?
That's right. And I don't think they're going to hire Belichick.
I don't either.
And I don't think he wants to be here either.
No.
How about that?
I don't think he has a lot of respect for the Bears.
Yeah, it didn't sound like it.
How was he on the Manning cast?
Oh, he was so good.
I did not watch that.
He's always great. I worry that you're missing something special.
I'm not missing anything special. I appreciate the insight he lends.
What was the best thing that he had to say? Well, he tells different stories and they tease each other a little bit. And he's a lot more natural. But it's him watching the game. It's him talking about what the safety is doing and what they like, how you combat that, and what you have to. I mean, it's just excellent. You would love to just sit down and watch a game with Bill, and it's kind of cool to have the Manning brothers. And then he says, "Well, as a defensive guy," and he'll make some joke about something that, we try to make it hard on you guys. Like it's just fun. He's a lot more comfortable with those two.
A lot more glib, too, than I expected.
Yeah.
What I have seen of him on that Manning cast, I've seen more of him with the Ryan Clark, that CIU show.
That show is fantastic.
It's really good.
Because he does this presentation to the team, which is
Professor Bill,
natural.
Or whatever,
so
the lecture.
Good. And he's and like the way he does it with kind of the Socratic method, he will ask a question about how do we stop it, you know, this kind of offense, and they'll yell out their answer. And he's
and they do that out of respect almost.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And I wonder how much fun is he having, and is he having enough fun doing this to stay away from coaching in the grind?
I think competitive. I just think when you're that good at something, it's hard to.
But when you're that good at something and that accomplished, though, you come back and you know you're not going to be that good. Regardless, whatever job he takes, and let's look at the likely scenarios in terms of rumor mill. Jacksonville.
That's a good
one.
The
New York Giants.
They got a quarterback.
The New York Giants.
The New York Giants do not have a quarterback.
That's a good point.
I mean,
but do the Jaguars have a quarterback?
Yeah, they do. Okay. I think he likes Trevor Lawrence, and I think
reminds him of Brady a little bit.
Maybe
and tall, think about kind of stationary, but smart, processes things quickly. Has a good enough arm. I could see him in Jacksonville. They'd pay him a ton of money,
and they'd stay out of his way.
They would let him rebuild that franchise.
Yeah,
that's the most likely scenario.
That seems like the place you'll.
Did you see
Vrabel was on the Manning cast too? By the way.
Oh, wait a second. I remind me of the. My point I'm going to make, but I want to know about Vrabel. I didn't see Vrabel.
What did he say? I didn't stay up for Vrabel. I went and listened to the game at halftime.
I'm fascinated
by
what his role will be in trying to repackage himself as a candidate. Because he's a guy, when we talk about all these Thanksgiving conversations we're going to have, if it starts with Belichick and you shift it toward Vrabel, I'm looking forward to seeing people's reaction.
I think what was super cool is Bill was telling some Vrabel stories, and he said the Mannings were saying that he always resented how Bill talked about the great linebackers with the Giants in the 80s, and he always felt that he was telling them that he wasn't living up to it. And Bill said Vrabel was a great guy, you know, great player. He talked about him as a player. But he said that he showed up at practice one time with a Giants helmet on. So he goes to a New England Patriots practice. He has gotten a Giants helmet so that he can fit into the 80s
funny.
Linebacker.
That's funny.
It's very funny, you know?
See, I think Vrabel, what I have seen of him, what I know of him, would be kind of like that kind of sneaky funny at times. I think he would be a good head coach. He might not suffer fools very well.
Right.
But I'm curious about his
hard as nails guy
interest
man.
In becoming a head coach again.
You know what's funny? This is so weird, but I remember being at the Super Bowl and he's out there as a player. I covered practice. They have a pool reporter that covers practice, and it was always Dan Pompey was a pool reporter for one of the two teams, and Dan would sometimes get to the Super Bowl later. So early in the week, I would cover a practice for Dan. I think one year I covered two practices, which is a totally cool thing to do, frankly. And it's also like a big responsibility because I think Peter King was covering the Oakland practice and didn't notice that had gone on a
Barrett Robbins
had gone down.
I remember
Mexico.
That.
You remember that whole thing?
Yeah, I do remember.
And everybody, I remember the reporters talking about like how did that
it would be an even bigger deal now with all the sports gambling sites.
Yes, you're right. But anyway, so I got to talk to Bill a couple of times. It was really kind of a cool thing. But at the end of practice, they were playing the Eagles one time, and I called my buddy who was a huge Eagles fan, and I was like, dude, you are in serious trouble. I couldn't believe how loose as a goose and how much fun they were having at Patriots practice. They were loose as a goose. They had been through it. They were on their way to another one. And it was, you could tell that they knew they were going to win. Anyway, Vrabel's got his kids out at the end of practice, and he's kind of messing around with them. And he, like, his kids are trying to play some football, and he is, like, manhandling them. You know what I mean? Like, he's like lined up with them, and he's kind of shoving one guy and grabbing the other one. And it was like the kids loved it. But it would, like, nowadays, I don't know that you're supposed
to be on YouTube.
You know what,
like,
I mean? Like, I mean, I'm just saying.
TikTok
like,
and.
Like, I used to do this thing where I would look at my son. And I would just grab him, and I'd like hold him, and then I'd say to him, "I'm holding you after 100, I'm taking all your money. The guy had never dive. He's a little kid. But he would go crazy trying to get out of my grip because I was going to take all his money. And I would sometimes just go over and grab him, and then I'd go like 57, 58, and he'd go crazy. It was one of the funniest things that we ever had going. I loved it, but I don't know that I'm supposed to be doing that, right?
I don't know. You can probably get away with that.
That was great. We're wrestling.
I can't wait for you to tell Mike Vrabel that story when he's in studio the day after he gets hired.
But then after the, when they did the draft remotely, you will remember this, Vrabel's sons were like dressed in those like outfits like the, you know.
During COVID.
During COVID.
Yeah.
And they were. It was like so weird.
I do
that
remember
these
that.
Two kids are staff, and those were the kids he was he's wrestling
good,
around.
He's
with.
Got a good sense of humor.
I thought yeah. it was just a.
They
funny,
grow up fast, Mully. They grow up fast.
Oh, I know, David. I yeah, know. I'm going sorry. Through it myself. I got two left in college.
But Mike Vrabel is a very viable
brings a tear to my eye.
Head coaching candidate for the next cycle.
Yo, no
and
question.
And he's a guy yes. that I think. Let's say hypothetically. The Bears, a week from now, are in the midst of a coaching search. I don't know that that's going to happen. We'll talk about all the possibilities, certainly. But whenever that commences, Mike Vrabel will be on the list.
I'm glad we're talking about this because I wanted to run a name by you. And I know you like the defensive guys, and you have no problem following a defensive coach with another defensive coach, even though, as we know, the priority must be the quarterback.
Everything depends.
Got to get someone. But we've had this conversation, mm-hmm. the two of us. I don't know that we've had it on the air all the time. But so the Bears are going, they're traveling to Detroit. It's a quick trip, right?
Yeah.
You could drive there. It's only 4 hours away. And it's Detroit, I think, is a pretty good town. It's improved a lot as a town. It's a fun place to go. Point is, you know, everyone's talking about whether Ben Johnson would be interested in the Bears job. Would he be a guy that could run the offense? Is this kind
I'm
of
hearing that's unlikely.
Is this a job? Is this sort of an interview for him?
I'm hearing that's unlikely.
I'm hearing similar things. But yesterday, as I was doing my travels and looking over some stuff and watching the news conferences in Detroit, it was interesting to hear Dan Campbell talking about Aaron Glenn as a potential head coach in the NFL and how hard he works. And I read somebody, and I apologize for not looking at the reporter's name as closely as I should have, but they wrote a story about him suddenly emerging as a possibility to be a head coach in this cycle. I hadn't thought about Aaron Glenn, and I hadn't thought about the idea that he's a hardworking guy and a leader of men
is.
And has been there
and
done
good for
it.
Him. His defense has really emerged as a force.
Especially after they lose.
They haven't given up a touchdown, I think Flusie said, in 12 quarters.
Yes.
Is that right?
12 quarters.
And they have three games this year where they've had 10 points or less. I mean, this is a dominant football team the Bears are playing on
That's
Thursday.
Right.
And all due respect to Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn does deserve his praise and due. Here's my caveat when I talk about being open to defensive-minded guys, air quotes, and guys who were probably on the list maybe because of their leadership qualities. I would prefer, if you're going after one of those type of guys with that profile, that he comes to his next job, the Bears in this case, with head coaching experience.
Okay.
I would prefer that because I think if you're going to take a chance, and I think
you
every
don't
time
want
you
to
hire
be in the same boat.
Yeah, you're right. Every time you hire a head coach and you're making this his first head coaching job, you're taking a risk. And I think you want to if you're going to take that risk, you're going to want the reward to be an offensive explosion in Chicago.
Belichick and Vrabel are your guys as opposed to an Aaron Glenn.
Belichick's a pipe dream. Vrabel would be the guy at the top of my list.
Okay.
Vrabel would be definitely a guy who I could see first interview, second interview, whatever. I think he'd be the top name on a list of guys who would fit the profile of leader of men, guy who has done it before and probably would fit very well in this market if he has even a degree of success. So I like that idea. Belichick would be fantastic. I just don't think he'd be interested.
Belichick also is kind of defies the way that you buttonhole into. I think he's a genius defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, won Super Bowls doing that. But if you remember when they made him the defensive coordinator, he had been a special teams coach. And there was a pushback initially that how is this special teams coach going to run our defense?
He can't pigeonhole
him.
Yeah.
He also had tons to do with the offense.
No doubt.
And was involved in every aspect of it. And there aren't many guys like
that. That's a great point. Did you see?
But I just wanted to finish quickly this thought. When I first was covering the NFL and talking to NFL people and going over the first couple of coaching searches that I was a part of, I was told that, you know, you, obviously you're looking for the offensive guy and how you can work with the quarterback touch the ball, blah, blah, blah. But the benefit of a defensive head coach, according to the first things I learned while covering the league, is you get the added benefit of special teams. So there are three segments of the game, and if you have a defensive-minded head coach, he is going to want to keep more defensive players than offensive players. He is going to want players that contribute on special teams.
There's some truth to that, probably.
Because they're all – and where I'm going is – what the hell is going on with the Bears special teams?
Yeah.
With their defensive-minded coach who talks about complimentary football.
Right.
Guess what they're not getting complimented for?
Yeah, the special teams.
They're spelled differently.
They're spelled differently. You know that.
I was
they are definitely lacking in that department lately. They have been the special teams breakdown has been a Sunday almost as bad as the defensive breakdowns.
Yes.
But those two elements, those two phases have not been coming through. And oddly enough, it was the offense probably that had the best of the three on Sunday, which is
insane.
It is unexpected, certainly. So the next head coach, assuming they go in that direction and is trending in that direction.
Yes.
I don't know that you want to go into just being very structured or rigid in that. You've got to be flexible and keep an open mind, I believe, because you're going to eliminate some really quality candidates if you just go into saying, well, he's got to be a play caller. He's got to be an offensive-minded head coach. I think everyone who comes to Chicago is going to be offensive-minded strictly because the Caleb Williams will be here. So that's going to be the first thing you talk about at the interview. And so that's going to be the offense is going to be the front of your mind, not the back of it. The one thing I think is interesting in terms of coaching searches. Did you see what the Jets are doing? The Jets are enlisting the 33rd team.
Oh,
the Jets
no.
are enlisting wow. the 33rd team, which I'm looking forward to talking to our guy Dave Wunsch at 7:45. The 33rd team is a great website and a group. It's almost a football think tank.
Yes.
Rick Spielman and Mike Tannenbaum are the guys who were involved as well.
Yes.
The Jets are essentially going to the guy they fired, Mike Tannenbaum. To help them find his replacement help them replenish the organization that fired him, which is really funny. But it's also unique in terms of the approach. They're going to a media company, essentially, a media outlet.
Yeah, there's a lot of football people at the 33rd team, but I'm with you.
But what does the 33rd team do?
They do
it's
media.
A media.
Yeah.
It's a media
they
outlet.
Do podcasts,
they have a platform. Yes. They have podcasts. Yes. They have content on the website, and they're saying, help us find our guy. Can you imagine if the Bears, let's just hypothetically said, Mitch gets a call from Kevin Warren or George McCaskey. Mitch, we need your help. We need your station's help.
I got to tell you, you know.
Could you imagine that?
You could do worse.
I know.
Because
that's my point.
Mitch would probably tell them to talk to Olin. About and I mean I wouldn't that be
well I asked
funny?
Olin about that yesterday.
I know,
and I did it on purpose.
Of course you did,
because I think it's a good idea.
It is a good idea. The problem is that Olin remembers that story you wrote like 20 years ago.
Please stop it.
I'm just making a joke. He immediately made a joke.
Oh, I know.
Though.
I know.
I mean, it was
pretty
funny.
But the point, my so, point
here's
would be
the problem is that George he offered a job to Olin at like minimum salary. And then when Olin called him on it years later, George basically called Olin a liar.
There would be some fences to mend.
And I just say
I'm not even talking specifically about Olin Kreutz.
Yeah, I'm think talking he'd be a great one, though.
He would be a candidate, certainly.
I agree.
But I think Thayer, the ex-player factor, there are other guys who would fit the bill. I'm just saying that the Lions tapped into their...
Would you call Chico?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would find
he's
out...
been a head coach.
I mean, I don't know about head... Something... Something.
He's been a head coach.
Maybe he's your assistant head coach. Maybe he's on your staff. Maybe he's in your front office. Mm. I think that you have you have an alumni base in terms of former players that you've never really have relied upon.
You got Hall of Famers all over the place.
You do.
Right?
I mean, speaking of, I know we got to get to break. Wasn't it great to see on the back page of the Sun-Times today, Mike Ditka back in town?
Yes, Mike Ditka's back in town.
How about that? The coach.
There was a Sneedling, I believe.
He's this close.
Yeah, he's one word.
This close. One word to being back.
That's great.
That was good because there were some reports that were not accurate, but he's back in town and good for the coach. And hopefully he sees better days in terms of health. And it was really a surprise to see him on the back page of the Sun-Times. But nice little scoop from Sneed.
Yeah. She still has it.
She still got it.
Michael Sneed does a great job. And congratulations on that one. And I think everyone loved reading that. There's a nice Thanksgiving moment, right?
I hope they enjoy their stuffing.
Yeah. There you go. more than one day a year.
No, really not.
Now I feel like if I don't have stuffing, I'm blowing it. You know what I mean?
You got one shot.
That's what I'm saying.
You got one shot Thursday.
I was thinking about avoiding get some the of
stuffing.
The carbs, but
no
I got to get the stuffing. Stick in.
Yeah, you're not going to get it in April.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for reminding me. All right, we've got the pick six next. We're going to tear apart all the stories of the day. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What did you make of the opening statement from Bears head coach Matt Eberflus made in his media conference on Monday afternoon?
After watching the tape from yesterday, I'm very pleased with the effort and the way the team finished. Didn't get it done at the end, but putting ourselves in a position to win the game at the very end, 2 weeks in a row. You know, so that's grit, determination, working together. To be able to get that done, and now we just got to finish better.
Is this guy playing horseshoes?
Well, you're not playing chess, and it doesn't sound like he's playing professional football because the only thing that matters in the NFL is the result. I mean, listen, God bless him. They got to move on. He's got to keep the team together. I understand why he would open the news conference that way, but boy, did that ring hollow. It's just the tone of it was just kind of it's like after the game when he came out, he was proud of the guys. I mean, I don't know what that would be like to lose in the fashion in which you lost and then be told that the guy's proud of you. I don't know that generates, oh, wow, the coach just says the right thing all the time. Or if it's like, how soft is that? I don't know. I don't want to pick on him because he's got enough bad things going on. I think he's having a rough time of it, but this is just more grease on the wheel that is going to run him down, the karmic wheel that you just can't get past in the NFL. You said it's a win business. All that matters is winning, and it's a very cutthroat business, and he's too nice a guy.
He, Eberflus, is in a no-win situation, pun intended. So they did make a comeback, but then his defense couldn't get the job done. So they did do that. I mean, do the Bears and does Matt Eberflus deserve any credit for being involved in 23 one-score games since he's been here? They're not getting blown out, typically. Does that matter? And he's right. I mean, the last thing on that cut, now we've just got to fit. They don't finish. It's the old coffees for closers. They do not finish the job. They drag you back in. We had a lot of fun yesterday hearing callers, texters, talking about, leaving the game, finding out that overtime was happening, all this kind of stuff. But the quarterback, listen, the quarterback has played better in the 2 weeks, and he played better on Sunday than he played in the game the week prior. So this could be the good news, bad news. It's going to be bad news for Matt Eberflus. As long, and you guys brought this up in the first segment, I didn't jump in because I thought I'd save it for this portion. As long as Caleb plays good against the Lions, I think everybody's dressing or stuffing or whatever you call it, it's going to taste really good.
Okay.
I don't think it matters. The wins and losses don't matter.
Really?
They don't, because now They're not making the – if they won out, Mully, they're not making the playoffs. If they won every game, they're still not going to make the playoffs. Right now it's about the health and the improvement of the quarterback, which is what it should have been about the whole year. Let's go get him the best offensive tackle you can, and let's keep him healthy and keep him improving.
I don't agree with that. We'll get to that later. Not of course not. I just think that the season always was about making a run to a playoff spot. And
I agree, but now we're 4-7 though, David. That's why. But you have to turn the page.
But back to the question, if you're Matt Eberflus, I understand because he's an easy target that when he talks, people will pounce. And that's certainly their prerogative. Everybody wants him to sound as outraged as they feel. They feel betrayed by the Bears. And there's that anger and rage almost within, or there's like this feeling like you need to sound as ticked off as I feel at you. And he's never going to meet that standard. So he's always going to be there to mock. And people take their shots and people will pile on. That's fine. Evaluating him by his words, he's never going to measure up. This isn't the most eloquent coach in the NFL. This isn't even the most eloquent coach that the Bears have probably in the building. He struggles at this part of the job. What he's trying to do is trying to keep his team. He's got six more games in his head. He's a football coach, the football coachiest of football coaches. So all he thinks about is the next practice, which is leading him to the next game. And he compartmentalizes. And that's why he sounds the way he sounds. He's going to try to get the best out of the situation. You don't have to do a lot of mental gymnastics to look at the Bears and think they could be 7-4 as easily as they are 4-7. They're not, because he makes a lot of mistakes in big games in terms of big game decisions. He doesn't make those very well, but he's not going to sit there and own that every single press conference. So he says the things like, all right.
Very pleased.
Effort, very pleased. We can't finish. He says those things, and he probably should avoid that, but he's not getting a lot of advice on how to handle the public portion of the job. If he were getting good advice, if he were getting any advice, it'd be more obvious by now. So he sounds like a football coach talking about grit, determination, and trying to keep his team on track.
You know what it sounds like?
It's unacceptable, probably, but it's not surprising.
It sounds like an attaboy.
There are no attaboys at Halsall.
That's a good question.
Thomas Brown said.
Voice of Coach Dave Wansett. He's here at 7:40 for a couple of segments. What does your gut say about the Bears' next move if they lose in convincing fashion to the Lions on Thanksgiving Day? Are there any more staff moves Matt Eberflus could make?
I think if they lose on Thursday, there's a chance that they will shock us and fire him on Friday. I don't expect that to happen if you're talking about a gut reaction. Your gut reaction is, the Bears are the Bears, and things move slower at House Hall. The pace of life tends to slow down to a snail's pace, especially when it comes to personnel decisions. Surprising that they fired the offensive coordinator? Yes. Head coach is a different story. The McCaskies probably don't want to be the first to do something, this regime. I don't think George McCaskey would want to get involved, and he's not been as involved from what people are saying. And that probably means they keep him. If they don't fire him Friday, I don't think they fire him before the season is over. I think if he keeps his job beyond this next weekend after what I expect to be a pretty embarrassing loss on Thanksgiving Day, they'll probably just let him ride it out, because there will be five tough games left. It's hard to envision a win on the schedule. Dustin might end up being right about this all along, but gut says they probably keep him even if they lose. And if they keep him, they probably will just ride this out, because that's what the Bears do.
Well, if there is another special teams snafu, Richard Hightower might be showing the door, just trying to wake people up. Not his fault. I thought the line of questioning was out of control yesterday with the media and Coach Eberflus about not, paying enough attention to this. But here's what I didn't get a chance to do yesterday. Maybe you guys rewatched the game as a form of punishment. But I actually wanted to go back and watch all the field goal attempts. And again, they made some long field goals, right? I mean, just over Sunday's game, right? Was Pryor in there the whole time? And if he was, like, shame on them. Like
he was to start the game.
Right. He was on the one that got blocked. Did he continue? Did they make that adjustment?
They made the adjustment.
So he was taken out.
Yeah.
Okay. So they didn't get another Tevin field goal blocked the rest of the way.
Was it Tevin they brought in? Yes.
I'm not sure. That's an important.
They might have brought in the the tackle and moved him.
Oh, Braxton Jones.
Yes. I think it was Braxton.
Wow, Braxton. Okay. I'm saying, so I think that's important, especially
Justin, they had a field goal blocked. They did nothing about it. And then they responded after a second field goal was blocked.
That's my point.
And three have been blocked this year. So, I mean, I don't know why you're congratulating them.
No.
They noticed after the next block.
That's why I think the special teams coach can get fired. Is my point. But I am glad that finally. And now here's the I really have an issue with some of the questioning up there, and this is one of them. Because you just confirmed what I just asked, and I think that's important. Instead, well, was it addressed? Why wasn't it addressed more? How many snaps were paid? I mean, on and on and on. They did, and whose decision was it? When that happened, did Matt Eberflus say, listen, Richard, next man up. Pryor's done. No more Pryor on special teams. And if that's what happened, good. They at least did something and didn't let it continue.
Wait, now I'm thinking about it. We got to ask Biggs about that because I can't remember what I wrote down on my notes after they.
You might have to go through it in here. I'm just curious. Is I believe Pryor was the one in there when it got blocked, and did they make an adjustment?
Wasn't Larry Borum, because he was one of the guys that didn't play.
Right. Look, I, you know, like what could be weaker than after you fired your offensive coordinator, you lose three more games. And then you fire your special teams coordinator. Like at some point, and you're right, David, you got to get to the final solution here. You got to get to the real problem that is coming probably at the end of the year, just because the Bears they're proud of the fact that they don't fire a coach in season. And they feel that is, you know, if you come to Chicago, we're going to give you enough time to show how good a coach you are. Now, that's changed a little bit under George, and they moved quicker on some of these guys than they have in the past. But their timing is awful weird. I don't know. I think that Matt Eberflus could be fired if they lose this game, and the question is if they lose it badly. And if they have a really lopsided loss, that's conceivable. I think the problem you're left with is who's going to do it, but you know, when you hear some of the noise coming out of there, I think there's a lot of different possibilities. I think he keeps his job. I don't think they fire him, win or lose. I don't think they're going to win. So I don't know how they're going to win. This is the hottest team in football. You know, you can say Kansas City's had a great year, but they've had 8 one-score wins. They're just a great winning team, and they got a great player who can make plays at the end of games to win games, and it makes them about as dangerous as you can be. But when you start lining up the teams that you think are really going somewhere, the Lions are probably number one. They're probably right now, the Eagles look awful good because they went out and they spent on a running back. How about that? And that guy's having an insane year. I think we were talking about Derrick Henry a couple weeks ago about what the great year he's having and how he's helped, and could he be an MVP candidate? Well, there's your MVP candidate, is Barkley. I mean, he's just been
single. One or the other.
Has been phenomenal, and he's a couple hundred yards ahead of him now.
Those two guys could be the front runner.
So, I mean, it'll go to a quarterback, but it could be Lamar, to be honest with you, after last night again.
MB3.
We'll see. We'll see. I'm very interested in what Olin told us yesterday. The Bears, their offensive coordinator on the road. What are they going to get done against this defense on the road? Should be, you know, the offensive line plays better at home than on the road, so it should be really interesting.
There are a bunch of question marks over the head of this offense.
Voice of Jared Payton, he's here at 9. Who on the Bears defense is having a good year? Who on the Bears offense is having a good year? And if it's hard to name players who are having good seasons, how fair is it to pin the season on the coaching staff?
It's a great question. You know, when you go into a 5-game tailspin, no one's having a good year, right? I mean, I think that we've talked about Montez Sweat as the best player on the defense, or is it Jalen Johnson? You know, we probably should talk about what Jalen had to say yesterday. He couldn't understand how he got those penalties. I thought both those penalties were penalties. I mean, I don't understand how you can come away from that.
He was grabbing cloth.
He said, well, I did grab him for a minute, but it didn't change his.
You grab him for a minute.
The official standing there.
I was only going 75 for at least 10 seconds.
I know.
Officer.
I digress.
I'm sorry.
I know. But I'm merely saying that this is really, it's difficult. Those are your two best players. They're not having good seasons. We think that DJ Moore might be their best player on offense, not having a great season. Who's having a good season? Who's having a good season? It's like a mystery wrapped in an enigma. You lose five games in a row. The punter's pretty good.
Troy Taylor?
The punter's pretty good for a rookie punter. He hasn't been perfect, but he's having as good a season as anybody, and he's a rookie. You envision him getting better. But I'm befuddled by this question. The linebackers aren't playing great. You know, the secondary's been banged up. The offensive line doesn't have anyone. The defensive line doesn't have anyone who jumps out at you. I think Kyler Gordon's probably having a pretty good year. I've seen him make some plays, but he's also been banged up. And it's you're scratching your head with this question. Cole Kmet, when they throw him the ball, looks pretty good. Doesn't block that great.
But it doesn't block that great.
Good podcast.
Right? You know, doesn't always catch the
great
ball
podcast.
When it hits him in the hands. Good is such a good on whose measuring stick, right? I mean, you know, good.
Yours.
DJ Moore's had, and not because he's our guy. DJ Moore's had a good year. But not by his own standards. Not by his own standards. But again, he with the new offensive coordinator, they're going to him more,
yes.
Right? I mean. Jalen Johnson's had a good year, but not a great year, and DJ Moore and Jalen Johnson are not having years equal to the contracts that they've both gotten from the Bears. Okay, you can name a guy, and I can give you.
I agree.
Well, when you're losing like this, is it polls?
Kind of the point.
Should polls be? I mean, it's going to be hard to make this roster. Really?
Doesn't look like it.
You know, it's going to be hard to make this roster.
This roster may be.
Your roster is average.
Without any Pro Bowl players.
Zero.
Wow. And think about that. There's really not anybody that you could point to and say, oh yeah, he's having a good year. DeAndre Swift, he may have the numbers. He may have 1,000
yards. He's improved,
but he started slow. He may be the best candidate. I think you look at the offensive line, there are no candidates for good seasons there. The receiving core has been a colossal disappointment based on expectations. The quarterback is on the verge of having a good year. He's going to finish. If he finishes strong, he could. Defensively, that defense has been disappointing. Jervon Dexter started well. Montez Sweat had his first sack in a month.
Yeah.
Since he got paid, he's been different. Linebackers, let's not talk about the linebackers. Maybe TJ Edwards.
Montez Sweat is having the best pressure rate of his career. I'm just saying.
He's not getting home.
They didn't get him any help. I mean,
it's like a power hitter that's getting doubles and singles.
That's very true.
I'm just saying, you know, warning track power.
I don't think I can defend anyone.
I don't think either, but TJ Edwards might be having the best season of any defensive player, and yet he was involved in the
yes.
pass coverage the other day that Jordan Addison got loose and they picked him apart. So this is a tough question because the roster is flawed.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
How much of a problem will the Bears have with Detroit's running game, especially the combo of Montgomery and Gibbs? Can you believe they are the only set of running backs to each run 10-plus TDs in their first 11 games since Green Bay's Horning and Taylor back in 60?
Wow.
What does this game mean more to, Montgomery or DeAndre Swift?
Well, that's a great statistic. It's crazy to think that it's been that long. DeAndre Swift may feel like he's got something to prove to the Lions, but David Montgomery takes the field every time, every game, like he's got something to prove to somebody. So my feeling is his sense of purpose and passion will be greater than anybody's on the field who will carry the ball on Thursday. He runs angry. Against the Bears, he runs angrier. So it's David Montgomery.
The only problem with David Montgomery is, Mully, and you love this stuff, yesterday's initial injury report.
Yeah.
David Montgomery not able to take the field.
Yeah.
Not able to go through a walkthrough.
So, yeah.
I mean, I agree with everything David said. Yeah. I think, you know, in his heart of hearts, the guy who wants to show somebody something. But again, Matt Nagy's not here anymore, and he's the one who called him chubby or whatever and thought he was out of shape. But it would be David Montgomery. But maybe David Montgomery. And again, you know, the Lions may want to rest David Montgomery. In as much as he wants to play in this game, they don't. They probably don't need David Montgomery on Sunday. You can't sit both guys, but you might not need him, and you're going to need David Montgomery when it matters. And that's, unfortunately, it's not going to really matter on Thursday.
You know, I mean, it's a crazy statistic that you got. I remember my father used to talk about Jim Taylor. He thought Jim Taylor was a phenomenal player back in the day. Never saw him. And Paul Hornung, I only know from reputation, really, and his personality and some of the, you know, post-career stuff. But I got to tell you, DeAndre Swift is a team removed from the Lions, right? And he's kind of one. I would think that it's not him. He's not the one that has something to prove. And you're right about David Montgomery. He always plays like that. I think Montgomery's going to play. According to the stuff I was reading and listening to, there are a few other players that are in worse shape than him. And, you know, running backs on Mondays, you know, you take a beating at that position. And I think they got a couple of really good ones. So I think the Bears are in trouble with the run game. And I think that statistic underscores it.
Different question on a different topic.
Mike Florio, he's here at 844 to take us around the NFL. What do you think about Lonzo Ball traveling with the Bulls now? What was the biggest takeaway from their two games over the weekend? One good win, one embarrassing loss.
Yeah, I heard Billy say yesterday that he was asked if they're working on their defensive problems, and he said every day they're working on their defensive problems, and I'm sure he is. And that was the problem. They lost... They gave the Grizzlies 142 points. They give up a lot of points, man. And when they give up over 140, they got a hard time winning. So that's what happened there. I like the idea that Lonzo is back traveling on this two-game set. I hope he plays, and I hope he helps, and I hope his wrist is fine, and I hope his knee feels good, and I'd like to see the guy back. I think... it'd be fun to see him play tonight. Are they in the NBA Cup tonight? Am I?
Yes. Yeah,
so we'll get like.
Can't wait to see what the Wizards court looks like.
We'll get a really ugly floor.
I want to see it. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Red, white, and blue, baby. Right.
Oh yeah.
Nation's capital. They're on. This is a game. If the Bulls aren't going to win this game, they're not going to get anywhere near 30 wins. All right. Lonzo Ball said this is a 30-win team.
No, he said 40. He said 40.
Did he say 40?
Yeah.
Okay. Are they still? They might not get near 30. Okay, this is if you're going to put a win on your tally sheet, this is one you got to get. They're actually favored tonight by 4.5, according to our guys over at Circus Sports Illinois. They live and die by the three. Bottom line, this is now a team that either lives and dies by the three. Io was in the starting lineup against the Hawks, had a nice night, and then they gave up 5,000 points, it felt like, in that loss.
Scottie Pippen Jr.
Kind of cool story,
that
right?
That was cool.
Yeah.
And now his dad's in the fashion business now. So no more bourbon. Now he's designing clothes.
I think the Bulls give up more points than any team in the league. They're last in defense, 123.9 points per game. They're dead 30th right there. So I also wonder how much of that is related to the pace at which they chose to play. When you have more possessions, you give more possessions. When you shoot more threes, the ball is going to be flying back and forth. So they're scoring more. They're playing their way. But the problem with that is that they're giving the other opponent more times to beat them off the dribble. And they can't stop anybody off the dribble. So they need to toughen up defensively. And I don't know if that's feasible given the pace at which they play. The takeaways from over the weekend, besides the Scottie Pippen nice story on Saturday, little nostalgia nod, but Matas Buzelis had a game against the Hawks, and he had a career-high 14, and he finished with authority, and he's getting more time with Patrick Williams out, and this doesn't have to be a season that where he doesn't see time with the NBA team. He doesn't have to spend it in the G League. And his emergence over the weekend was an encouraging sign.
He's confident.
And Lonzo Ball, when he's in uniform instead of wearing really look cool clothes on the bench, I'll be interested.
You know how you lose a lot of advantage with your defense is when you trade your best defensive player for Josh Giddey.
You know how that's a great question.
There he is, Brett Bielema. He'll be here with you guys, 9:25, big game at Wrigley this weekend against the Northwestern Wildcats. How do you expect the College Football Selection Committee rankings to reflect the notable upsets of SEC powers, Alabama and Ole Miss, and other various
machinations?
Thank you. Over the weekend, what in the world is that word? Where will Indiana be ranked? Machinations?
I think Indiana will be ranked in the top 12. They will get a spot at the table. And I think tonight's outcry will come from various campuses in the SEC where, like, oh, we have three losses and we're on the outside looking in. Yeah, you do. It's a new day. It's a new era. It's a new format. Get used to it. You're not that good this year, SEC. Sorry, the Big Ten is better. And now you're going to have to just look at that reality. The Big Ten is better this year, Dustin. They have more teams in the top 12. So I think that, yeah, you're going to look at the tape and say, well, yeah, you know what? Alabama could be the stop. Stop.
So machinations is a noun. It's a plot or a scheme.
We're,
well, for the rest of us out there. The rest of us, not journalism / English majors.
Well, okay. I don't.
Machinations.
I don't think that's not a difficult word. Frankly.
Never seen that word in my life. Public school educated and proud of it. Go District 205. Alabama would be, well, we could ask Joe O or we could ask Joe Fortenbaugh this tomorrow. Alabama on a neutral field would be at least a 9-point favorite against Indiana.
I so don't care about that.
I said that. That's
That doesn't matter.
David, how many times would Indiana beat Alabama?
I don't care.
Well, okay, but that's again.
That's not the question.
Bad brand
Read the
of
question
college football.
And pronounce it correctly. The question is the question. That doesn't matter if Alabama would beat Indiana. That's not the thing.
It was said correctly because Molly said it. I just it stopped me cold, as Molly would say.
Stop with the SEC stuff, man.
SEC
Indiana
is not,
lost once to the second-ranked team in America.
The only ranked team they played all year, David.
Oh, you Paul Feinbaum?
Only ranked team they played all year.
That's what I Feinbaum is basically, that's what he's making that noise, Dustin, and that's why there's all this intrigue going on, because the SEC realizes that two of their teams went on the road, and you go to Oklahoma, unrated Oklahoma, and you score 6 points.
That's an awful loss. It is horrifically bad.
It's
agreed 100%.
It's a terrible loss. It's a terrible loss at a terrible time, and now you've got three of them, and this is where all the intrigue is. I got a feeling they're shutting them out. I don't think Ole Miss going to Florida. Florida's been playing better, but Billy Napier looks like he's fired. Okay,
he's so fired.
And I mean, to have gone to that down there and lost that game, I get it. They're in the swamp, but these are none. These are away games to unranked teams, bud. At you know, the penultimate week of the season, or I guess now we're at the penultimate week. It is just really difficult to have a loss like that in this time and think that you're not going to get slapped down by the College Football Playoff Committee. And it doesn't matter, as David is saying, what the line would be, who would be favored. It doesn't matter, because they have, for the most part, taken care of their business. Indiana's beaten a lot of good teams. They did very well against common opponents with Ohio State. They didn't beat Ohio State. They went into the horseshoe and they got stuffed. Did anyone think that was going to go differently? And I mean, like, if Notre Dame loses to USC this weekend, are you going to argue that they belong in the playoff? No.
No.
Because you have bad losses. And some years your schedule might look tougher, and it won't be tough because the teams you're playing are But it looks to me like this is a really – this is – I'm looking forward to tonight because I don't know how the committee does anything other than shut out the SEC.
And please let Mr. Feinbaum over there know that there are four Big Ten teams in the top ten, yes, and there are three SEC schools.
Right.
So I submit that for
– And I think – When did Penn State and Indiana play? Oh, that's right. They didn't.
You play
Maybe
the schedule.
Play in the playoff.
Yeah.
Actually, they could play in the playoff. We'll find
Imagine
out
if Georgia loses to Texas.
Just start speaking with a Southern
in
accent.
In the SEC title just game, and now SEC. Georgia gets kicked out of this thing.
Well, Georgia's
worse than Indiana? Give me a break.
But here's
if they
the
lose?
Thing. Yeah, if they, like, again, it's not just losing. It's the time of year in which you lose, man.
Give me a break.
If Notre Dame was undefeated and lost in Northern Illinois instead of now, they'd be in trouble too. That's just how life is, man. I mean, there's you lose, like, what if Ohio State beats Oregon in the Big Ten title game, provided they beat Michigan? Wouldn't that be
they're both still in.
Well, I know they're both still in, but I'm saying, wouldn't that make them the one with the bye, and wouldn't Oregon then go on the road? I'm just because they'd be
we'll
Big Ten champs.
Later.
All right, well, it's good. It's going to be fun to see. That's all. All right, we've got the Extra Point next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Machinations?
Frankly.
Never seen that word in my life. Public school educated and proud of it. Go District 205.
Set up this Extra Point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
How significant is the agreement between the Bears and Arlington Heights over the amount of tax to pay for the 326 acres of land they own? What happens next?
I think this is one of the more significant stories of Monday. I believe that this is progress. If you care about progress in terms of the Bears building a stadium on property they own, the 326 acres that they own, the 326 acres they paid $197 million to own. Things are going in that direction, and Kevin Warren arrived. Now they are fixated on the lakefront. Doesn't look like it's going to be the South Lot. A lot of obstacles in the way. Oh, what about the Michael Reese site? That looks good. Are they going to go there? Because they might have private money in investment at the Michael Reese site. A little bit narrow, but the Bears say, well, that wasn't really us. That was more the developer. Okay, fine. A lot of obstacles in that way. You know what just happened on Monday? This is the equivalent of the I-Pass lane opening up and this clear sailing to Arlington Heights. If time is money, the Bears are wasting both by not heading in this direction. If they want us to believe they're serious about getting a stadium built in expedient terms and as fast as possible, they will take advantage of this. This was a hurdle that they now have cleared. This is something I think is significant. I agree with the mayor of Arlington Heights, Tom Hayes, who called it just that, a significant step back toward Arlington Heights. If you aren't going in this direction, Kevin Warren, tell us why. Tell us why. This requires more than a no comment. This requires an explanation because now everything's in place. Get the shovels in the ground.
Let's change a line a little bit from Field of Dreams. So where they build it, they will go. It doesn't matter if they build it in Arlington Heights. It doesn't matter if they build it at Michael Reese. It doesn't matter if they redo something at Soldier Field or redo the South Lot or they go to the 78. Wherever the Bears play football, lots of people are going to go, and the new stadium is going to be gorgeous, and I hope I'm lucky enough to be there. Okay, I hope I am. I was there for the first game when they landed the flying saucer on top of Soldier Field. I was there. I have a ticket. Went with my dad. Great experience. You know what I want them to do now that they've done this? I want the Bears to rebuild Arlington Park. That's what I want them to do. Okay, I want Arlington Park. I want a better version of a great place that was torn down, a piece of my past that I'm never going to get back. So do me a favor. Build the stadium in the city. I have always said I want my professional teams to play in the city. You know what? Build the stadium in the lake. Let's go back to that. Floating stadium. Build me a new and better horse track. That's what I want in Arlington Heights.
Wow. I mean, you know, as you know, because we've been to the track together many times, Dustin, it breaks my heart that Arlington is gone. I had many a fun day there over the course of a lifetime, and I miss it. And I miss horse racing, generally speaking. Look, I think that the stadium on the lakefront is a no-go. Okay, the South Lot Stadium, that whole plan, that idea, I think that's not happening. I think they haven't gotten any infrastructure improvement for that. I don't see it happening anytime soon. I think the appetite for that in Springfield is non-existent. It would appear as if having the mayor of Chicago on your side means nothing because the city has so many problems. I'm talking budgetary problems. There's literally nothing that can be done to help them. They're still trying to figure out where the money's coming from. The shortfall is like $1 billion. It's absurd. So it's all, you know, we're dealing with monopoly money. The idea that the public are going to kick in $2.7 billion so you can have a stadium where there is a stadium already that's not paid for, it's just, it's crazy.
Remember when people were invoking fiscal responsibility?
That's right.
Whatever happened to that?
I don't think it's been taken seriously. So now that this Michael Reese thing, that is interesting to me only because there is enough business people perhaps supporting that, building around it. But there's still Metro Tracks.
And
they have to figure out a way to. It's very ambitious.
Complicated.
And it seems like it would take a very long time.
Yes.
It feels like you could have shovels in the ground by January.
This has been expedited now.
If they want it there.
If they want it to be.
If they are satisfied in having it there, then all these other elements have just added to the approval of the tax plan. I know there's still some things that it was comical. It was like a memo. There's some way they describe the understanding. So the local boards and the schools still have to vote on it, but they've come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be done in the next month, and then you could get going. I just think they need to get going. I think that they're running out of time and they need to get going. And I love the idea of them in Chicago, but it doesn't feel like it's going to be able to work out in terms of the money. So get going. That sounds good to me. All right. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
And one of the things I always look at coming home to the city is I always look for cranes in the air.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That, of course, the voice of Kevin Warren, and he's talking about building in the city.
And I want to be fair, Kevin Warren did not respond to that report yesterday about them reaching an agreement in Arlington Heights with the three school districts over a long-running property tax dispute. But the Bears did issue a statement and said they remained focused on investing over $2 billion for a publicly owned and closed stadium on Chicago's lakefront while reevaluating the feasibility development in Bronzeville. And they said that they remain landowners in Arlington Heights, and they left it at that.
Yeah.
So it was essentially,
still a breakthrough.
We see you here. We know this. Yeah. We're remaining on the lakefront. This could be leverage. Who knows? But they've got an agreement. They've got now an impetus to proceed.
Hey, they
got
to get going. I mean, just the clock would tell you they got to get going.
Calendar.
And I don't think that the state is going to cough up the money to let them get going on the lakefront.
I agree with you. I do not think that it's a non-starter.
Yeah. So, well, okay. All right, we got to get to a break because we've got our guy Biggsy. We're
going
to bring in Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune. We'll talk to him next. Mully and Hall on the Score.